This is the Adam Gold Show.
This is a great story. Before we get to the league pass layer, Dennis, you brought this to my mind, but I'm going to read it right off the Colorado Rockies Twitter. Tonight's game, Rockies versus the Mets, has been postponed. There is a winter weather advisory. There's snow. What was the temperature yesterday in Denver?
88.
88! Yesterday. Snow today. Denver. Denver, Colorado, people. No joke. No joke. That just probably prevents a Mets pitcher from getting injured anyway. Max Scherzer, 6 to 8 weeks with an oblique strain. Come on. Will you leave my team alone? Jacob DeGrom hasn't thrown a pitch yet. Max Scherzer only makes like 40-some-odd million dollars a year. Now he's out a couple of months. Got to hold it together with the other guys. All right, little NBA playoff discussion, shall we? It's our roundtable.
Camelot. Camelot. It's only a model.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and all the scenes of footwork and bed cable.
We've got Brendan Whitten from the League Pass Lair. You can see him on TV if you're watching this on the television at HUCosell on Twitter. Maybe we'll just ask him how Howard University is doing at All Athletics. Also, Brian Geisinger is going to join us. Brian is here. At BGeis underscore bird. He is not pictured. Real quick, I'll start with you, Brendan. How are the Bison doing?
Softball, they just won the MEAC tournament for the first time since 07.
Nice.
They're in the Florida, they're playing Florida State today. So, you know, shout out to Coach Tory Tyson, who I had on Bison Break for HU Bison Express. So, pulling for her. She's been fantastic for them. This is the most wins we've had in, I think, over two decades.
Wow.
So yeah, it's big time over here. It's big time. And track and field just had a big win too. So shout out.
Florida State's legit in softball. Yeah. So we wish we wish Howard University all the luck in the world in that. All right. We'll bring in Brian Geisinger. Let him start. Should we be surprised that Boston did that to Miami last night?
No, you should not be surprised by what went down last night. Boston's a really good team. And when they're able to score like that, and you could see, like, they found the pressure points in Miami's defense. They were moving the ball around. They went, obviously, you know, insane shooting the ball from deep last night. When all of their guards are making plays like that and they're spraying around, they're making Miami take the ball out of the net. And as we've discussed plenty of times now on some of these Friday sessions, Miami's half-court offense is bad, or is maybe not bad, but is maybe not what you would think of with a normal, you know, team with title aspirations or a conference championship team potentially. So, in Boston's an elite defense, probably the best half-court defense in the world. And so, no, I'm not surprised that a game got out of hand where Boston was having a terrific offensive performance and Miami was just completely, you know, stuck in the gutter offensively in the half court. And it does not help when Bam Adebayo is not giving you the type of, like, offensive aggression that you need. I mean, I don't think that was enough to do it, but they need more out of him to be a guy that can beat switches, when Miami's in the drop, can punish them by getting downhill on rolls. They just need a little bit more zest from those actions. But no, not surprised with the result last night.
Brendan, does Kyle Lowry change the game that much?
I think he definitely does. He was huge for them during the regular season, and he got them easy buckets. BG just brought up the fact that they can get stagnant in the half court, in that half court offense. He was always one for pushing the pace, and this is not a fast paced team by any means, but he's able to, you know, he's able to get the look aheads, and even if it's not a traditional fast break, he's able to get kind of secondary break stuff happening. They really, really miss him. You know what I mean? Like, if you need that sort of half-court general to, like, move things and get them where they need to be, because they can get kind of stagnant and get in some iso ball stuff, which is not great for them. The Bam Adebayo thing is interesting because I remember, I think, in maybe at the end of the Heat's last series, or maybe it was halftime of game one versus the Celtics, They were kind of talking about, hey, they need more from him. But I don't know where he's a scorer. You know what I mean? Like, he's a great defensive player. I thought should have been in the consideration for defensive player of the year. But, like, he's not a guy that you're going to, outside of maybe some role sort of situations, I don't look at him as, like, hey, he needs to be an initiator on offense. Outside of offensive rebounds and rolling on those picks, you're not going to throw him with back to the basket sort of stuff. I don't know where like, what he's going to give offensively.
Well, the stuff with Bam is not just, like, throw it into him in the post. And, you know, he's not Embiid. He doesn't score that way. Mm-hmm. But he's also not Rudy Gobert, where he's just a pure dive guy. Like, Bam Adebayo has face-up game. He started shooting mid-range jumpers last season. In a big part of their offense, maybe not quite as much with Duncan Robinson basically being shelved, but they still have movement shooters in this roster, a la Max Strus. So a big part of Miami's offense is throw it to Adebayo in the high post or at the elbow, and they get into that split action, right? Like, they're in that regard, they're almost the closest thing to Golden State. Right, in terms of they can play through the, or I mean, Denver has this too with Embiid, but without Adebayo, like, his initiation isn't just scoring; it's his work as a distributor, his work as a handoff guy, his work in the way he can be a hub for Miami in the half post, which they need because again, the half court offense can get stagnant. But for that to be fully unlocked, you need him to also be able to threaten as a scorer. Because if not, then those actions aren't going to have the same type of punch. Brendan did bring up a good point about Kyle Lowry that I agree with. And look, if Boston's going to mix and drop coverage like they've done with both Horford, Robert Williams, Grant Williams, having a pull-up shooter like Kyle Lowry would be a big help too. Because right now, Tyler Hero is the one guy. I mean, you know, some Gabe Vincent, I suppose, as well. But Hero's the best bet to come off a pick and get to his jump shot. And so Lowry would give him another guy that could threaten and push Boston into some different pick and roll coverages, which could open up, you know, other stuff elsewhere on the floor.
One more thing about Miami, and we saw. I mean, Jimmy Butler went bananas in game one, scored 41, just dominated the third quarter, and Miami dominated the third quarter. They outscored Boston by 25 in the third, and that was basically the game because Boston had the lead at halftime, and then Miami just came out of the locker room. And it's like Boston was locked in there. What has happened? I mean, I know, okay, Hero is a sixth man, but they didn't even play Duncan Robinson at all in game one. He played a little bit yesterday and did a little, but I mean, where have those other offensive pieces gone for Miami?
Well, Miami's a very interesting team because it can be any guy on any given night, which is, it can threaten you as a defensive, like sometimes a Strus, sometimes it's a Butler. Duncan Robinson, we haven't seen at all. He'll have a big game or Tyler Hero. The problem sometimes with that is that you can't necessarily rely on any one person outside of Butler to consistently give you something. It's really, really interesting kind of how they've done things. I don't 100% understand completely just going away from Robinson. He had played pretty well in the playoffs, and then I understand it's a matchup sort of situation, but he just isn't getting any sort of burn anymore. There are times when I don't necessarily know if Miami understands who it is offensively, and if they're not getting those, you know, steals and playing in transition, that sometimes they don't even understand what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, for Miami's half-court offense to have success, they need the blend, right? Because as great as Jimmy Butler is, and he can tear the roof off. Like, he is an incredible talent, but he's not a pull-up shooter, right? You know what I mean? Right. Like, his game is inside. I mean, every now and then he can get to a three ball, but for the most part, his game is inside, you know, inside 18 feet, inside the paint, drawing fouls. So they don't really just have a guy. This was the hope that Lowry would give you some of this too, and Hero can be this as well, of give them the ball, and then hopefully they can run a pick and roll and get a great shot. Hero's not there yet as far as it goes creating for others, bending the defense. Lowry does, it's never been quite his game, but he's been pretty good at doing it at an earlier, more healthy stage of his career. So they need the blend. That's why they need Adebayo to come online as a guy that can facilitate and give them stuff from the elbow. Now, again, Robinson was the main guy that he worked with that stuff. You know, they would turn Duncan Robinson into a South Beach Klay Thompson. Yeah, that's what he looked like down. That's what he looked like down in the bubble. Now he's just a guy. It's like he's getting $90 million to be a podcast host, which, like, respect to him. That's the dream, honestly.
But yes.
It's not helping Miami win basketball games.
I'm sorry.
Right now,
I lost it. I was just thinking. I'll take 1% of that.
Yeah.
1% of that just to do the Canes Corner podcast, available wherever you get your podcast after every Hurricanes game. I know the teams are not structured the same, but Brendan, is there a similarity between Dallas and Miami in that we know that offense is coming from one spot, but they need somebody else to consistently step up and be a number two? If Dallas can't get that, this is going to be a short series.
Dallas is really, really interesting because part of their success has been built on playing small ball. I don't think you can out small ball the Warriors. Like, it's just, I just don't think that that's how you're going to be able to do it. And that's essentially what they're trying to do. Brunson, like, I thought they had a really, really good game plan on Brunson and just not allow him to get in the paint. He's like, even for a small guy, he's does such a good job of scoring in the paint and scoring around the basket. He's not much of a off the dribble shooter, and they played him as such. Whenever he got the ball, they were falling back. They were playing him, they used to play Rondo back in the G. Like, they were really giving him a lot of space because they knew where he wanted to get. They know he wanted to get downhill. They're going to need something from him or Dinwiddie because Luka by himself isn't going to be able to do it. And they were able to get enough from Finney Smith and those other guys in terms of shooting. They were able to – Luka was able to collapse the defense and kick out to them. I just don't think that this is a really – I think this is just a really bad matchup for the Mavericks, and I don't think that this series is going to go very long. But I also thought that – No, he wouldn't be able to pretty much do it himself last series. So what do I know?
Yeah, Luka as a problem solver is just he's incredible. But look, if Kevon Looney can switch out and have that much success defensively against Luka like he did in game one, if he does that, if he does that for the rest of the series, this thing is over. Like, we can't even play that's got Luka has to eat on those matchups all day. He's got to do what he did to Zubac in the playoffs the last couple of years. Just burn that guy to a crisp. Brunson's secondary creation is huge for them. He really is just like the perfect like former Villanova guard because when he gets into the paint, he gets to like he starts putting his butt into the defender. You know what I mean? He does that like he does the mid post kind of like back down move that all of those Villanova guys do. Just Brunson's like arguably the best at doing it. Because he's so strong and he can just burrow underneath taller and longer defenders and get to that. So when you take that away from Brunson and make that tough, it not only does it take away his scoring, which they need, but it also takes away some of the easier shots that he helps create for teammates in Dallas.
All right, let's handle two more topics. One is somebody who's no longer playing in the NBA or at least the playoffs, and the other will be about the Hornets, who I guess fall into that category too. I'll start with you, Brian, because I know you're a captain of the Chris Paul fan club. This isn't really on Paul, but some of it has to be, no?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, look, it was a tough matchup because defensively Dallas could just say, hey, you, come here, right? We're like, good luck trying to guard Luka. And like Chris fought, but Luka is bigger and stronger. And then offensively, Dallas did an excellent job fighting over screens, then late switching, and then showing help at the elbows, which took away the mid-range jump shot from Chris. It looks like maybe he was physically compromised somehow. Like, I mean, you can agree with the report from Mark Sears afterwards that his hamstring was hurt, or you can laugh at it, you can mock it. Like, it doesn't really matter. Either way, like, he did look physically compromised. What I would say is, in the spin that I would put on it, and I acknowledge this as spin, is like this happens every year in the NBA where like a team in the regular season is better than the sum of its parts and they overperform their talent. And then when they get a bad matchup in the playoffs and they lose, then we fillet them. Right. And the same thing I think could be said about Chris Paul, who is 5'11 and 37 years old. Like, it's amazing that he can even still be in these type of situations. It does, however, speak to the constraints that he puts on a roster as a max contract player. and a guy that probably can't be a number two on a title team unless like the number one guy was like, you know, Giannis or something. You know, you need it needs to be a top five guy in the league, not maybe a top 15, top 20 guy like Booker, who's awesome. Those guys are great together. But as far as like opening up a championship window, you know, Paul probably needs to be the third guy, you know, which he, to an extent, he kind of was with Ayton and Booker this season as like the quote unquote big three for Phoenix. So yeah, bad matchup. Looked like he ran out of gas.
Or yes, he definitely did.
But like hats off Dallas again. They were ready for that. And they took everything away. But I do think there are some lessons to be learned when stuff like this happens, which is like, there are teams like Phoenix every year, you know, that overperform. And then when they lose in the playoffs, we barbecue them. Where instead, we should probably give them credit for what they did the previous 6 months.
You have thoughts on the demise of Chris Paul, Brennan?
Shout out to Pat Bev.
That was pretty disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like Matt Barnes was right. Matt Barnes was right about Patrick Beverley. I'm like, dude, nobody remembers us.
He was auditioning. He was definitely auditioning for his next career post basketball. We're definitely gonna see him on First Take in about 3 or 4 years. I the thing that I have lauded Phoenix for, I think maybe hurt them a little bit down the stretch in terms of everybody has a clearly defined role. You have Devin Booker and CP3 as the initiators, and you have finishers, and you have the wing players who are pretty much just 3-and-D guys. When CP3 and like BG said, either he's hurt or maybe just ran out of gas. He only took one shot in the first half of that game 7 when they were getting absolutely dump trucked, and so like he just was not at all just a part of the influencing mechanism of that game. But when he went down, there was pretty much nobody else that could initiate. So you saw some possessions of like when they were really just starting to like really just go down the rabbit hole in terms of the lead. You saw these possessions where Bridges was trying to start something or one of the wing, and it just didn't work. And it was all on Booker. And he, as good as he is, I don't think he's there yet. No. I don't think he's that sort of a guy that's just like, okay, everybody hop on my back and I'm a carry us. He's been able to be kind of in his silo as I'm a two guard. I'm getting mine, and then I'll let CP3 kind of orchestrate everything else. When Paul went down, that kind of, or when he, whatever happened with him, that kind of like sunk them as a team. And they'll probably need, if they're, you know, trying to make decisions for next year, they'll probably need another initiator, somebody to take a little bit of pressure off of CP3 and Book.
That was a stunning demise. Let me get the stuff about the Hornets in here real quick before we have to say goodbye. Mitch Kupchak is back. Brian, is that a good thing?
Real quick, would also just say Dallas did a nice job trapping and getting the ball out of Booker's hands. It's like, you know, there's some stuff he just couldn't do because they just Dallas wiped it away. But as far as Mitch Kupchak goes, I think it's solid. Like, I think continuity is good. Charlotte has been building something, albeit with James Borrego as head coach, who's no longer there. They've drafted very well with Mitch Kupchak as GM. Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, LaMelo Ball, second round picks like Cody Martin, JT Thor, Devontae Graham. So the drafting has been good. This is going to be a difficult offseason for Charlotte. A lot of questions to answer, a lot of stuff they could try to do. They have two top 15 picks in the draft. I'd like to see them use those picks and continue to develop. But look, if your owner is Michael Jordan, he's telling you to win now, they might get desperate and either try to move one of these big salaries off the book, a la Gordon Hayward.
Yes.
Or try to use some of these prospects and young players, draft picks, draft capital, to go out and try to trade for another player, right? That'll help them get to 45 wins and get the 7th seed in the play-in tournament or whatever. But I think overall, Kupchak has done a decent job in Charlotte. And again, he and his staff, they've drafted well. You just can't – I don't think they've been perfect in the draft. I think they've missed on some guys. But they have drafted well for the most part, including in both the lottery, early, late lottery, and in the second round. They found guys. So I think it's a good – I think for the most part, yes, this is a good move because it's stability – And hopefully it means a continued success in the draft, which is what a small market team like Charlotte needs.
Whoever decision it was to sign Gordon Hayward to that contract. I don't like that guy.
Who do you think, man?
I don't like that guy as a decision maker. That guy, like, come on. Seriously? That's a lot of money for somebody who's unreliable. Brendan, do you have any thoughts on this before I kick both of you guys off?
I just want them to figure out something for the center position. I thought that hole was a really big one that really hurt them overall. And I think that they aren't that far away from being a playoff team if they can just Hayward being healthy, I don't know, but if they can get a consistency from the center position, I think would help them greatly.
Yeah,
draft Mark Williams at 15, man.
Yep.
Or package both of those picks and get Paolo Banchero. That's not going to happen. I'm just kidding.
No, it's not.
Brendan Whitted at HU Cosell on Twitter. Go Bison. Brian Geisinger at BGeis_Bird. Go Bison. You both That's get the right. Go Bison treatment.
There yes. it is.
There you go. That's All right, right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Be good, guys.
When we come back, we're going to fight it out in who you got. Plus the rewind, and we'll find out if my wager, essentially against Tiger Woods, is going to pay off. Next. 7 o'clock Storm Watch tonight for the Hurricanes and the New York Rangers game 2.
The late one.
It's only an hour. It's not like it's a 10 o'clock game.
I don't know, for some reason, the 7:30 games are more annoying than an 8 o'clock game. I don't know why.
I mean, because we don't like 8 o'clock starts.
But, no, we don't.
I mean, it's only an hour. It's going to give me a chance to get to where I'm going this weekend and watch the entire game. 7 o'clock start, I'd be listening to a good chunk of it on the radio or letting one of my children drive, probably the 23-year-old, and not the 13-year-old. I don't think so. I've seen him drive a golf cart. It's not pretty.
Okay.
And watch it on my phone because I can. We have that capability now. Mm-hmm. We have all this technology allows us to not necessarily be at home and still watch what we need to watch. But I don't. I mean, I'm not in love with an 8 o'clock start, but it's better than an 8:30 start.
Yeah.
Just say that.
I remember, was it last year against Nashville? They had an 8:30 Central Time start, so it was 9:30 Eastern. That game went to overtime.
Yes, brutal.
It sucked.
Brutal. All right, let's fight it out, Dennis.
Peter Mrazek or Alex Nedeljkovic. Pancakes or waffles. Scorpion or Sub Zero. We pit two things against each other, and we say, "Who you got?"
All right, first one here. Because there are a lot of concerts and shows taking place in the state of North Carolina this weekend, including, like I mentioned, Old Crow Medicine Show tonight, Sylvanesso has multiple shows in Durham, and John Mulaney has a show in PNC Arena. Who you got, an indoor concert or an outdoor concert?
Is this even a fair fight?
I mean, some people prefer one or the other.
I mean, first of all, it depends on the type of music. I will just say that. But the best concerts I've ever been to are basically all outdoor.
Yeah.
Right? Steely Dan on the side porch, actually, at Biltmore Estate.
Oh, really?
Wow. Great show.
Okay.
Rolling Stones, Wallace Wade Stadium. Any number of Grateful Dead shows. RFK Stadium, just an awesome place to see the Dead. I could see the indoor concert, but it has to be a certain type. Like, it almost has to be jazz,
mm-hmm.
in a small theater type thing. I've seen Bradford Marsalis in a small theater, and it's just amazing. So
I've seen Dickie Betts from Allman Brothers indoors in a small venue that was standing room only, and it was absolutely amazing.
Saw B.B. King at the House of Blues in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, really?
It's pretty cool. Not going to lie. It's pretty damn good.
I'm about to go outdoor concert as well.
Yeah, to me, first of all, do you like live music or – studio music. If you have,
I love going to concerts and music.
Going to concerts is different. I'm asking.
Oh,
so when you are listening, if you are listening to music, like let's say you're mucking stalls, Dennis.
Yeah.
All right. And you got earbuds in.
Okay.
What are you listening to?
I'm probably gonna go something studio.
You are?
Yeah.
I will always choose live music.
Yeah. Not that I won't ever choose live.
Always.
Okay. All right. Next one we have here.
While I'm mucking stalls.
While you're mucking stalls, of course. Next one we have here, because we mentioned rapper Big Pooh, along with Fonte, the duo known as Little Brother, is performing this weekend alongside Sylvanesso at Durham Athletic Park tomorrow. You mentioned Winnie the Pooh, so I got a question for you. Who you got, Winnie the Pooh or Tigger?
Wow. I didn't see this battle coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tigger is way more athletic.
Yes.
Way more. I don't think Pooh can
great
guard.
Bounce.
I don't think Pooh can guard Tigger. Incredible vertical.
Yes. Great bounce.
Yeah, but not a very smart player, but neither is Pooh. Right? Pooh's very basic. And I believe that if you put a honeypot, you know, just outside the three-point line, then Pooh would just never leave it.
Yeah.
He would just stay right there. So, difficult, but Pooh is just... You know, I'm gonna go Tigger. Have you ever seen the Tigger movie?
I don't think I have.
The Tigger movie is very good. Oh, it's arguably better than most of the Pooh movies.
All right,
I'm good, but I'll go Tigger.
I'll go with you on this one, Tigger. I was a huge Tigger fan growing up.
Gosh,
yeah,
those characters are all all amazing.
All right, next one here.
He's also the only one. I'm the only one. He's the only Tigger.
That's true. Yep. One and only. All right, last one that I have here for us, in honor of the PGA. Who you got? You taking a great – who are you going to be as a golfer? What attribute would you rather have? Be great off the tee or a great short game?
Well, that's actually not a fair fight. There's a reason they say you drive for show and putt for dough.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like short game, like around the green approach shots.
Give me the best short game.
Okay.
Not to mention, if you are a golfer and you have a great short game, you are going to frustrate the person you are playing against. And I will just say, go find YouTube videos of what Seve Ballesteros used to do to players in getting up and down from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd rather have a good short game than a good long game. Any day of the week.
All right. I'm probably with you on that one. A good short game.
Speaking of which, Rory McIlroy just chipped up to about a foot and a half from about 100 feet from the hole on one. Tiger is on the green in regulation. I will lose my wager unless he three putts.
He sinks 3-foot putts.
I think Tiger's going to be fine. I think Tiger's going to roll us in.
This is the Adam Gold Show.